It is week 45 of the year 2020, and this is Father Roderick to the Max. Welcome to another episode of Father Roderick to the Max. I'm recording this, I have to be totally honest, on a day that is filled with trepidation for a lot of my followers in the United States. I'm recording this on Election Day. Actually, for me, it's already evening in the U.S. When I'm recording this, it's still 3 o'clock, so everything is still possible. The future is open and uncertain, but I'm pretty sure that for a lot of you, now that you're listening to this, it's already over. Doesn't really mean that you already know the outcome, and maybe that will take quite a while. But I definitely hope that once this is over, a little bit of the madness will also start to disappear, and kind of calm will return and common sense. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about politics anymore. We're going to talk about a lot of other things here on the show. But let me first again, thank you for being a supporter, being a patron. I get these kind emails from people that are signing up or that are upping their contribution. Also, sometimes people have to lower their contribution. Of course, we live in difficult times, also financially dire times for some people. And so I totally understand if people have to temporarily kind of lower their monthly contribution or step away as a patron for a while. I just got an email from a friend in Venezuela who said, you know, for me, it's really, really tough to stay a monthly supporter. I totally understand. So never worry about that. I appreciate whatever help you can give. And what always happens when there are a few people that unfortunately have to stop their monthly donations, there are always new people that arrive. And oftentimes compensate for the loss in contributions from the other friends. So there's a strange, cool balance, I think, to this whole community, which I really appreciate. But thank you so much for making it possible for me to move ahead with all these projects and not having to worry about the future, because you've got my back, and I appreciate that. All right. Let's start with the show, and of course, as usual, we first dive into the kitchen. And today I want to talk about two recipes, not one, but two. One is a typical traditional Italian dish, and it's called, it's from Naples, and it's called pasta puttanesca. And I'm going to give you the recipe the way I prepared it. I wasn't really happy with the outcome, but it's probably because I took a shortcut at one point. I'll explain later. But even though, you know, it wasn't perfect, it was still cool to try out new pasta. The second recipe I'm going to give you is, and I'm going to start with that, is a very, very traditional, typical Dutch recipe for this time of year when it gets colder. It's definitely autumn. Today I was filming in the southwest of the country, very close to the sea. I had to film myself on my bike, because that's part of the format of my TV show. You know, I arrive, I kind of pretend that I'm on this tour by bike through Holland. By car, it takes an hour and a half to get from where I live to there. If I would do that by bike, it would take me more than 10 hours. But anyway, it's all, you know, smoke and mirrors anyway. But I had to film myself on the bike, driving through, there was this beautiful city park and then parts of the city. The thing is, it was storming. It was so cold. Like, this morning started with beautiful blue skies, sunshine. And, of course, the moment I start filming, you get these dark rain clouds and the wind is getting stronger and stronger. And so I had to ride my bike, right towards the camera, and then, you know, over bridges and everything, and constantly I was fighting against this stormy wind, which is much stronger there when you're close to the sea than where I live. I'm in the center of the country, so a lot of the wind has already kind of slowed down a little bit. Plus, I'm in a city environment, so the bigger buildings also break the wind a bit. But I was completely out of breath and cold. Fortunately, it wasn't raining. And it took me about an hour to do those those bike shots. And I was so cold. I was like, oh, I would love to get myself some warm pea soup, because that is what we eat when we're cold, when we're sad, when it's dark outside. We crave pea soup. And I'm going to give you the traditional Dutch recipe, or one of the traditional Dutch recipes, because there are many ways in which you can prepare this. This is the recipe that I followed. I'm sure that if some other Dutch supporters are listening to this, they will have other variations. I kind of like this one. I like to try these variants on the traditional recipe just to see how it tastes. This one even has more veggies than normally. Of course, the basis is split peas. You need, and those are super cheap. This is actually a very affordable soup, and you can make a huge quantity and freeze it in. It's a very suitable for the freezer, and then you can just, I usually put it in small quantities, and I take out a block of soup and heat it up in the microwave, and I can enjoy this for another month. That's the cool thing. Whenever I crave pea soup, I can now just get it from the freezer. No, I'm not only doing this, but even restaurants will do that. So I remember, like, years ago, I was filming in this small, very traditional Dutch village. Like, everything was styled as you know, 19th century, and it was just like in a dream. And it was a very cold morning. There was mist. There was a harbor. So a canal, and then lots of little, ships, sailboats, small sailboats. And because it was misty, the sound was also dampened. And I remember that was at the time that I was not very experienced in doing this TV work. So back then, I just had to learn all my texts by heart, just like in the beginning of podcasting, where I was reading scripts. Basically, I would write out everything I said on a podcast. I can't listen to that anymore. But anyway, for TV work, so I would rehearse my texts and then narrate them in front of the camera, and it usually took a lot of time because I would forget my lines, and then we'd have to start again. So just recording, I think, 6 or 7 of these small presentation texts normally took about 4 hours. Now I film an entire episode in 4 hours, but back then it was just this, and then you have to stand still or do a little bit of a walk towards the camera, and it was so cold there, and the mist was... It was not really freezing, but after a while, when you're in mist, it's still humid. So you would get this your feet would get humid and cold. And then we saw everything in the village was closed because it was early in the morning. And there was this one restaurant that was open, or I think it was even a bar. It wasn't really a restaurant. And I remember that there was this handwritten panel in front of the door that said homemade grandmother's pea soup. And it's like, okay, I need this right now. And so the owner, of course, I was curious, is this really your grandmother? Well, she was no longer alive, but it was her recipe. It was her, family recipe that she handed down. She had been given that recipe from her mother. And so now he followed that recipe with that pea soup. But he said, so I said, are you making this? Are you going to make it now? Do you have it, do you make it every day? He said, no, I'll just get it from the freezer. I was shocked. I was like, okay, so we're just going to get microwaved soup. That somehow doesn't sound as romantic as, I kind of figured that his grandmother was there in the kitchen, like with this big pan, preparing that soup. Instead, it was just a cold, cold freezer, which contained blocks of frozen soup. But I have to admit, it did taste really, really good. And here in the Netherlands, we eat it with rye bread. So this very dark, super condensed bread, a slice of rye bread, some butter, and then some bacon on it. We don't eat a lot of bacon in the Netherlands, but bacon is always part of the pea soup experience. So here's what you do. And I'm going to give you the European measurements. it doesn't really matter that much. So you take half a kilo of split peas. I mean, you can just wing it. It's soup, right? It doesn't really come down to exact measurements. You take half a kilo of split peas. Let's say a pound of split peas, maybe a little bit more. You need 1 leek. You need 2 liters of water. That's not a gallon, but I don't even know how to turn that into the American system. But anyway, 2 liters of water, 2 beef stock cubes, or you make, if you really want to do it fancy, you make your own stock, of course, with bones and everything. But I'm way too lazy for that. But the grandmothers, that's what they used to do. They would use real homemade stock. So I just take 2 cubes and then you solve it. It basically needs to be a good basis for the soup itself. Of course, also with the salt. Then you need 250 gram celeriac. And I'm not sure if this is actually available where you live. It's this, if you follow me on Facebook, you will have seen the photo of that huge, big, looks like a ball. And actually, it looks exactly like the mangroves. I think it's called mangroves from the second Harry Potter movie, The Chamber of Secrets, you know, where they're all in the botany lesson. And then they have to put on these earmuffs because as soon as you take out the plant from the pot, they start screaming. And well, the way those mangroves, I think they were called mangroves, the way they look, that was exactly what a celeriac bulb, I'm not sure if that's the word, but anyway, what that looks like. It grows underground, and it's got a very fragrant taste. So if you can't find it, you can also leave it out. It definitely will impact the overall taste. But I was glad, actually. I got this celeriac thing in a box of fruit and veggies that you can just pick up for €2.50. And it's basically fruits and veggies that they can't sell anymore. So they'll just put a lot of them together, and I just buy it like a box, and I look. So what can I cook with this? And I didn't know what it was, so that's why I posted a photo on Facebook joking, like, should I wear earmuffs before I start processing this in the kitchen? But then I was like, okay, this is a good pretext for me to make the pea soup, because this is one of the few recipes that I know that involves celeriac. So you need about a quarter, or I used half a celeriac bulb, 1 winter carrot, so that's one of those bigger carrots, not the small ones. We call them winter carrots. It's just a big carrot. Doesn't matter. A potato. You need a potato. I take a big potato. That is important for the overall consistency of the soup because it binds the soup together. It's like the force. So I take a big potato. 1 smoked sausage. That's another thing that I don't think you can buy elsewhere. So outside of the Netherlands, this is a very typical type of sausage. It's not made with the best quality of meat, but it's finely minced and it's been smoked. So it's very juicy on the inside. It's got this beautiful golden brown orangey color, and it's a staple sausage that we eat for pea soup. We also put it on bread. You can combine it with all sorts of, you know, potato dishes. But I don't recall having ever seen it elsewhere. But it doesn't matter. You can take any sausage. This works. It's soup. Make your own soup. I like the smoked sausage because it's all nostalgia. This is how my mom made the soup, and so it's for me, it's got to have that smoked sausage. It's about 275 grams, but you know, whatever. I would say take the bigger sausages. It needs not the small ones, because everything about this soup is chunky and winter based. So you know, go big. I also used 300 grams of shoulder pork, pork chop, which I would say pork chops. I just took one pork chop, and you boil it. You don't have to braise it or put it in a pan. You put it in the soup itself, and it will fall apart after a while. One bay leaf, a few sprigs of celery. So I went big on the celery. I like celery only in the soup. I don't like it raw, but I like it very much in the soup. And one onion, just a big onion. So what do you do? Super simple. You boil the water with the stock cubes. You add the split peas as well. Make sure you look at the, you know, what's written on the package of the split peas. Sometimes you have to wash them. In my case, I could just put it in. And it does create a little bit of foam. That's not a problem. Again, it's soup. You'll just mix it in. And you add a bay leaf. So again, 2 liters of water, stock, 2 stock cubes, split peas, 500 grams split or a pound of split peas, and a bay leaf. You boil it, and then as soon as the water boils, you add the pork chop, the shoulder pork chop, just whole, because it's going to sit there for about an hour. So you let everything simmer for an hour. Sometimes you have to stir it, and actually, if you stir it, it will speed up the process of the split peas falling apart. You want them to disintegrate in a certain way. So stirring helps. It also helps, it prevents the soup from burning on the bottom. So make sure you don't put this on a high, big fire or a strong heat, because you will get, charcoal on the bottom, and it will spoil the soup. While that is boiling, you cut up the carrot. I just wash it. I don't even bother to peel it, nor do I peel the potato. I just cut it into small blocks of, an inch or something like that. Celeriac, I'll cut it into small cubes. I cut the leek into rings. Of course, you got to wash the leek, otherwise you'll get all the sand in it if it's not cleaned already. You peel the onion, cut it into fine pieces, chop the celery coarsely. That's probably the celeriac. Okay, yeah, the celeriac, you have to cut that one into pieces. And you do have to actually peel the celeriac, because the outside is very tough. So you put that aside. After about an hour, you will see that the split peas have started to fall apart, and you get this green globby mass. Some split peas will still be tough. Others will already have fallen apart. Doesn't really matter, because this is going to cook for a little while longer. What you then do is you take out the pork chop, and you cut it from the bone. Make sure that there are no pieces of bone left. And then you chop up the entire thing into small pieces. And what you can also add at this stage are pieces of bacon, or not really the bacon, streaked bacon, but just these small pieces of fat. You can just throw it in. It will, of course, make the soup much heavier. But since this is a winter soup, it's really meant for days where you've gone, ice skating for 2 hours. So you'll have burned enough calories to handle the soup. So once you put the meat back into the pan, this is also, I think that, yeah, this is where I usually add the sausage as well. Also cut that one up, of course. You add the chopped vegetables, the potato, the onion, etc. And then you let it simmer for at least another half hour, maybe even longer. And here, again, simmering. I almost always burn the soup. It's really hard, because I don't want to, it takes a long time. So you should actually stir it every 5 minutes. But then I just go play a video game, forget about it, and I'll have a burnt the soup will have burned on the bottom of the pan. If that happens, and it can happen, just make sure you don't stir it too much. You don't want the burned part to mix into the soup, because it will impact the flavor. After about half an hour, you can see if the veggies and potatoes have already started to become tender and fall apart as well, at least the potato. You can also just add the sausage at this point. It doesn't really matter for me. You can maybe add a little bit of salt or pepper. Just taste it first, of course. And then you're done. That's it. What I noticed was, because I added a lot of celery to this soup, the veggies were not really falling apart that much. So sometimes if you cook it very long, it will just automatically mix. What you could do, in case you have this problem of, or if you don't like these chunky veggies in your soup, before you add the meat, so you'll have to kind of take out the pork chop and not add the sausage before any of the meat is in there, you can also use a mixer to kind of blend it or make it more smoother. I know that some people prefer a smooth pea soup. I kind of like the chunky aspect of it. It looks nice and you feel healthier. Doesn't matter. But of course, you don't want the meat to be in there while you're using the mixer, because then, of course, it'll become something you don't want to eat. So that's it. What I always do is I don't eat that soup the day that I made it. You leave it on the stove to cool down for at least a night. And during the night, all these flavors will start to mix and the entire soup will become so much better. The next morning, of course, it will be this block of, you know, pea soup, but it's no longer fluid. You have to heat it up for it to become soluble again. But that is a good sign. It's supposed to be like that. You put a spoon in it and the spoon should stay upright. That's when you know you've got the right consistency. When you're heating it up, either on the fire or on the stove or in the microwave, you can also add a little bit of water to it so that it becomes a little bit less chunky. That's about it. You see, it's super simple. Now, some of you have asked me to write down the recipe or the recipes, because you're listening to this in the car or while you're commuting or running or doing chores. Unfortunately, I just really don't have the time. But if you're a patron, you know that you have access to the Discord server. And there is a section called The Kitchen, which is the most popular section of the Discord community. And that's where people post their recipes, their photos of food they make. And I would invite the foodies there. You can help out your fellow foodies that maybe would like to have these recipes by maybe transcribing them. I wish I had the time, but I don't have it. But maybe you can just, if you want a recipe, just ask. That's what the community is for. Maybe some people have time to take notes and post them there in the kitchen section. All right, let's talk briefly about pasta puttanesca. I'm going to be lazy here. I'm just going to give you a link to a YouTube video that I follow to the letter. It's a great series. What's his name again? It's Alfredo, I think. He's an Italian. And his YouTube channel consists of pasta. Alfredo, I think it's Alfredo's Kitchen. Let me see. Pasta puttanesca. Now, this is a little bit of a weird pasta. I haven't eaten it much when I was in Rome. Oh, I was wrong. He's called Vincenzo. Vincenzo's plate. The pasta puttanesca, according to legend, this was a dish that was made for customers of a brothel in Napoli. And the recipe was meant to kind of give you energy and strength and whatnot during the winter times or whatever reason. But that is kind of a, you know, it's a myth. But the pasta, what sets it apart is that it contains anchovies. And so it's got this very salty, fishy taste, not too strong. I told you that I kind of took a shortcut with this recipe. You're supposed to make it with, what is it? these peeled tomatoes in a canned tomatoes. You put those in a pan and you crush them, which will also add more water to the mix. I used concentrated tomato paste, and it was too strong. It was way too overpowering. So if I'm going to make it again, I will certainly not use that tomato paste, but I will use those crushed tomatoes. I think it will make it lighter. So let me just move this over. I'm just going to play a little bit of the audio so you can get an idea of this. I love this guy. He's a good cook. It's very simple, rustic cooking. So it's nothing fancy, but he does absolutely correct a number of, let's say, versions of these pastas that are too Americanized or too fancy. He really, the way he cooks it is the way it's cooked in Italy.
Hi, and welcome to Vincenzo's Place, the place where you get to learn how to make delicious Italian recipes, homemade Italian recipes, with me. Today we're making pasta alla puttanesca, and has three main ingredients: olives, capers, and anchovies. A delicious pasta recipe from the area of Naples. Let's make it together, and I'll share the story of this pasta with you.
All right, so I'll post the link to this in the notes on the Patreon page, so you can take a look, or you can just go to YouTube and Google Vincenzo's Plate. He's got a lot of great recipes and a lot of the pastas that I talk about here on the show. I learned them by watching him cook. They're a little bit long, and he's a real Italian. He loves to talk, but it's got, I don't know, I really enjoy those videos. It's also very, it's not very complicated, and he's, you know, it is the way you would eat it in Italy. Pasta puttanesca. And with that, let's talk about comics.
I'm quite keen on comic books, especially the ones about superheroes. I find the whole mythology surrounding superheroes fascinating.
You ever try these comics?
No.
You know something?
No, what?
You read too many comic books.
Well, I have a great, great, great new gadget in my life. I talked about this in my regular show, the public show, that I had finally made a decision and ordered an iPad, a new iPad. It's no longer the small iPad, but I went for the biggest one, the 12.9. But because these things are normally super expensive, I mean, they easily go beyond $1,000. Yeah, it's insane. I went for a refurbished one, and not the current version, but the third generation iPad, which is almost identical. Even the processor has hardly been upgraded. And I know that I use the iPad mostly for, I use it quite a bit in the kitchen for the recipes. I use it for reading, for watching YouTube. It's my go-to device in the morning when I'm having breakfast. I just use it to browse the news. It's my radio. I listen to podcasts on my iPad. But past few years, I've really have been struggling with the small size of the iPad Air. I had one of the original iPad Air, which has a 9.7-inch screen. And especially when reading comic books, I still have a subscription to Marvel Unlimited. I just didn't like the experience. I read comic books before I go to bed, right? And so I'm not wearing glasses or anything, and I just got a headache from squinting, trying to read the texts. And so I knew that even though some of you have been trying to talk me out of getting the 12.9-inch iPad and go for the 11-inch instead, I knew that I wanted a big screen because it's for me a very visual device, and I like to put it on the breakfast table and being able to just read the newspapers and the articles without having to put on reading glasses or stuff. So it arrived today in the evening, just when I got home. And of course, I was a little bit wary because it is refurbished and it's not refurbished by Apple. This is an Amazon thing. So I was reading the reviews. You get a huge discount. So I pay for this one, I think, 813 euros. That's including tax, including German tax. But because since this is a device that I also use for media production, for instance, to monitor the YouTube comments and whatnot, and to post updates on the various pages, I ordered this through Tridio. So, and since Tridio is a non-profit organization, we can claim that tax back. So if you subtract the tax from the purchase, it only amounts to about 600 something euros, which I think is a great deal for such a nice device. But I was a little bit, you know, I was glad that that Amazon allows me to send it back if it doesn't really correspond to my expectations, because it's, you know, technically it's secondhand, and sometimes, and so they will include a line, like a disclaimer, that there may be some scratches, and of course you never know what kind of scratches. So I noticed that there's a little bit of a tiny little hairline, tiny scratch on the upper side of the iPad. You only see it when the screen is off, and then even then, you, it almost looks like there's a bit of dust on the screen. It's hardly noticeable, and of course, once you switch on the iPad itself, you can't see it. So I'm very impressed. I was setting it up just before I started this recording and immediately fell in love with the screen. It is so gorgeous. You know, I had two iPads, because that's a cool thing of Apple, is they just link these two iPads together, and so it can read info, and it took the Wi-Fi password and everything for my existing iPad and just filled in the necessary information on the new one. And then I downloaded some of the apps, which is always kind of it's like, you know, when you move to another house, you start to reevaluate what you want to keep. You're not going to put everything you had in your previous home, you know, furniture or paintings or posters or whatever. You will pick and choose, and you will maybe discard a lot of stuff. Well, that's what I did with the apps. I only had a 64 gig iPad. And I never really ran out of space because I only use a few apps on it. But I did notice that I had a ton of board games on there, and a lot of apps that I downloaded maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Because when I got the iPad Air, I have one other iPad, the original first iPad. And when I first got the iPad, I downloaded a ton of, you know, free games and stuff, and all that was cluttering up the iPad. I transferred all that to the iPad Air, but I didn't do that for this one. Now I was like, okay, I'm just going to go to the Apple Store or the App Store, and I'm only going to download the apps that I really use on a regular basis. And so that was less than half of the apps that I had installed on the previous one. So, and I tried out some of these apps. I have to say, the games look so stunning. And this is, again, a confirmation that I think I made the right choice, because the problem with, I was also coveting this new Samsung Tab S7 Plus, which is also a 12, slightly smaller screen, more of a rectangular screen compared to the iPad. iPad is 4x3, whereas the Samsung tablets are 16x10, I think, or 16x9, so it's more like widescreen, which is great, of course, if you're watching videos, but it's less screen estate. The problem with Android-based tablets is that there are almost no apps that are made specifically for tablets, and so you'll get a lot of apps that are just made for phone blown up, and of course, the quality will suffer from that. And some apps are misbehaving because they're not they're not supposed to be in this, you know, on this big screen. And so I've seen so many reviews on YouTube where everybody raves about the quality of the screen and the hardware and the specifications, but they all say the same thing towards the end of the review. This is still Android. So a lot of apps will not work, and a lot of them will really look bad on this big screen. Whereas with Apple, of course, you know, I played, there's this Simpson game that I've been playing for years and years and years. You basically rebuild Springfield. And it's a complete waste of time. But it looks funny, and it's like all the little characters. They've got the entire cast of how many seasons are there right now? 30. So you've got a lot of these characters from The Simpsons that you can collect, and they will just walk around in your version of Springfield. And if you tap on them, they will have these quotes, like real audio quotes from the series. I love it just for that. And plus, there's a lot of humor in that game. So I was playing that normally on my old iPad, and so I launched it on the new one, and oh my goodness, it was so big and so detailed, and there was so much more screen estate. I could see so much more of the town. I was like, wow, there is definitely no way that would have been the same experience on an Android tablet. So it was another confirmation that I made the right choice. And the other app that I'm really looking forward to using is Marvel Unlimited, which has this fantastic panel-by-panel function where normally, of course, if you read a comic book, just a paper one, you've got all the panels on one page and you just flip through the thing. You can do that with a tablet as well. Although, of course, a tablet usually is much smaller than a comic book on paper. And so they have in the app this function where they will zoom in on every part of the picture, even details. And so they manually kind of guide you, or I guess this is all done manually, where someone told the app, now first zoom in on this detail and then zoom out and then move the camera to the left and to the right. And it's a totally revolutionary way of reading comics. And actually something for me that is better than reading a paper comic book. This is absolutely something you can only do digitally. The only problem, which I've already mentioned, is that on my old iPad, it was so small. Whereas on this one, oh my goodness, it looks so fantastic. And the colors are also much more vibrant on this iPad than on the iPad Air. So it is a fantastic experience, and I'll be reading a lot of comics. I've kind of been holding out on reading too much on Marvel Unlimited because I was like, this should be watched on a big screen. And yeah, it is big. Actually, it is super big, but it's not as heavy as I thought it would be. I tried this out in the store, and I remember that when I picked up the 12.9 iPad, I was like, oh, this is way too heavy. But it was also, there was this magnetic protection thing that was glued to the back of that iPad, which made it so much more heavy. And now that I only have the iPad itself, I think it's actually quite fine. So, of course, I've only used this for about an hour now, but I'm already super excited about the, you know, all that it adds. And when I put my regular iPad next to the iPad 12.9, it looks like a phone now. It's so small. It's crazy. If I put it on vertically, it's the screen is exactly the same size. The height of the screen is as big as the width of the 12.9. It's crazy. It's like at least 150% bigger than what I had, and so much easier on the eyes. So hopefully more comic reviews here on the show, because I'm looking forward to reading comic books on this new iPad. All right, let's move to the next topic. I've learned on the internet. Now, you know that I am a huge fan of TikTok, And even though there are lots of issues with the app, and Trump, I think, wanted to censor it, or at least the people in America couldn't download it anymore, and then they struck a deal that the data of American users should be kept on American servers, etc. Very complicated stuff. But the concept of TikTok is so great. It just looks at what you like to watch. It analyzes that, and the algorithm is so good at giving you things that you may want to watch. And I use, actually, when you first launch TikTok and you set up an account, you can say what you're interested in. And I always click, information, learning, do it yourself, that sort of stuff. So I love to use TikTok, not for the silly dances, it couldn't care less, but there are actually a lot of people that are using TikTok to teach. One of these people is Vanessa Valdez. She is a professional housekeeper who works in Austin, in Texas. And she has, I'm not kidding you, 2 million followers. I'm sitting here being happy with my, 25,000 followers on YouTube. She's got 2 million followers. And it's all because she posts videos of how to clean your house. And she demonstrates, she films her TikToks while she's at work in, I suppose, mansions of her clients. But she's got a great screen personality and makes cleaning look, first of all, easy, and secondly, fun and gratifying. Because she first shows you a room where it's a total mess, and then she says, well, this is what I do. And then she demonstrates it, and then you see the end result, and you're like, oh, I can do that too. And it goes from how to clean your bathroom to how to fold your sheets, how to make pretty, like when you go to a hotel, sometimes even the toilet paper will be folded, and there will be also all the tricks are revealed by Vanessa Valdez. She calls herself the Queen of Cleaning. And if I think of it, I will include a link to her TikTok handle in the show notes on Patreon. Let me just click on this video. You can also find some of that stuff on YouTube, but it's mostly previews. This is definitely something that is made, I think, for TikTok. So here, for instance, is a video on how to clean your mattress. Let's see if it plays. Of course, it won't play. Why is that? Does it have to load? No. I guess my browser is just blocking this. Let me click this one.
Wait, don't go. Let me ask you something. When was the last time that you cleaned your mattress? Let me show you how to clean it. Let's go.
First, vacuum your entire mattress. Then sprinkle baking soda on your whole mattress.
Baking
and
soda?
And leave it there for at least 10 hours.
Then vacuum your mattress again.
You gotta do this in the morning.
This is what I have on this spray bottle.
This gives you a recipe of how you
spray
make
it on.
This cleaning spray.
Use a toothbrush for stains. This used to be like this one.
Let it air dry and you're done.
So I think that's totally amazing that in 40 seconds, she teaches you how to clean a mattress. And this is not something that I would ever do or even Google. But now that I've seen this, I was like, I can do that. I think that's feasible. And so all these TikTok videos are 30, 40 seconds. But you learn a lot. And I don't know. It's like a Marie Kondo for decluttering and organizing. This is similar, but then for cleaning. And I've never really thought of cleaning as being something fun. But ever since I started to follow the Queen of Cleaning on TikTok, I'm like super motivated to try that out. And so I've been cleaning quite a bit here in the house, following all these things that I learned on TikTok. We live in great times, I believe. Oh, that was the wrong jingle. Let me just press this one. Liturgy! This is the section where I will talk a little bit about the secrets of Catholic liturgy, the symbolism, the rituals, and even the objects and the stuff that we use. And today I wanted to talk about communion wafers. I've been recently filming in a monastery where there's a community of about 20 sisters, I think. Franciscan sisters, Clarist sisters. So it's more a contemplative community. And I was there to film an episode about the fact that they reverted back to vegetarian lifestyle. About 10 years ago, the entire community decided to switch back to vegetarian eating, which that had been... in the olden days of monastic life, most monks would eat vegetarian, and some of the stricter communities still do this. But about a century ago, the quality of food, quality of cooking was not good enough, and so a lot of these sisters would get iron deficiency, etc. And so at one point, the doctor just recommended that the community switch to eating meat, which they did for about a century. And then there was this new sister who, I think she entered the monastery at the age of 22 or something like that. She's like, okay, but I would love to cook for you. And she gradually reintroduced vegetarian techniques. And of course, nowadays, there's so much more knowledge about food and about how you can cook healthy and keep everyone healthy. And so I was there to film basically that process and talk with that sister about the advantages of being a vegetarian. This is a long introduction for something completely different. And then, she also had developed a number of vegetarian recipes for spreads that you can put on bread in the morning. And they were selling that to create an additional stream of income. And then she told me that, well, we used to make money by selling host communion wafers. And then another sister took me to the bakery where they made host. And I was like, wow, oh, I never really realized that those host that came from this monastery, that they were making that. Of course, I was thinking about, I don't know, a factory or something like that. But these are all handmade. And the reason that they switched to the vegetarian recipes is that with the corona crisis, a lot of parishes suspended their masses or only had a few people present at mass. I've celebrated mass for weeks and weeks without anyone present. And so their entire stream of income from selling these hosts dried up right there because of COVID. And so now they're trying to sell some of their vegetarian products to compensate for that. But she still showed me how it was made. And I was curious. I'd never seen that in real life. And it's very simple. So they've got this circular plate. Looks something you could use for, I don't know, for cookies or for pancakes or something like that. So they heat that metal round plate. They have a very simple, what's the word again? It escapes me. Beslag. Oh, just the other day I was also struggling with that word. It's not dough, but it's the liquid dough. How do you call that? Translate. Ugh. Beslag. Batter. I knew it. Batter. Anyway, the batter itself consists only of two ingredients, and only two are permitted. You cannot add anything else to it, otherwise it becomes invalid, what the church calls invalid matter, which means you can still say the words and you can still perform the ritual, but it won't transform into the body of Christ because the substance is not what Christ himself ordered us to use. Of course, Jesus was using unleavened bread because this was around Pesach, the Easter celebrations. So it was a specific type of bread that had no yeast in it. So it's this very flat bread made only of wheat flour and water. And so because Jesus explicitly tells his apostles, do this in memory of me, from the early days of the church until now, the church has always followed that very literally. Do this in memory of me. So it uses the same kind of bread, or at least the same ingredients, and wine, and has never replaced it by other stuff. So no rice cookies or, you know, banana beer or Coca-Cola or whatever. No, the valid matter can only be, in the case of hosts, wheat flour and water. And then for wine, it's got to be pure wine, so not tampered with, no chemicals in it, and preferably also with a high alcohol percentage. So usually it's very kind of sugary wine because it won't go bad. You know, if you open a regular bottle of wine after a couple of days, you can't drink it anymore because it turns sour. With communion wine, it's almost always more, it's still wine, it's not liquor, but it is more, there's more sugar in it, more alcohol, so it stays, you can keep it for a year in a bottle and it won't go bad. But it was interesting to see, they make that batter with just wheat flour and water. They put a spoon on that on that metal circular surface, and then they close a lid on it, which will then spread out the batter over the total surface and create a very thin wafer. And that's also the moment that you can add a stamp on it, basically, or sometimes these bigger hosts will have like an image of Christ on it, or that's the moment when you do that. But in this case, it's just this big circle, wide circle, and then they take that to another room where they use a smaller machine, and they will stamp out these smaller circles. And those are the actual hosts that they then gather and sell. And there was something very cool about it, that the hosts that we use are made by sisters that are praying while they're doing that. It is not for them, it's not just a job. It's something that they know is kind of, in a certain way, already part of the liturgy or part of the mystery of what the church celebrates. And then they make that possible by that work. I thought it was very beautiful. And then the remains, because of course, if you stamp out all these circles, there is a lot of leftover stuff, and they use that in the kitchen because that, of course, has not been consecrated. So it's just bread, and they use it in the soup, and she had all sorts of recipes with, you know, remains of hosts. I thought it was hilarious to see how creative these sisters were. Time to wrap things up. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I want to leave you with one tip. I have already talked about this free game that you can download called Genshin Impact. G-E-N-S-H-I-N, and then just Impact. It's a Chinese RPG. It's beautifully done. It's in an anime style. And I've been completely hooked on this game for about 2 weeks now. Whenever I have a little time, I'll just roam about in that beautiful imaginary country, slaying dragons and gathering fruits and flowers and cooking meals and exploring dungeons. It is so playable. The thing I love the most about this game is the soundtrack. Well, actually, two things. The visuals are stunning. You got to keep in mind, this is a free game. I've already played I'm not even going to guess, but way too many hours. I can easily play this for 2 hours every day. So the graphics are amazing. It takes a long time for this to become where you get to the point where, you know, it becomes interesting to pay a little bit to advance. I think you can continue to play this game without ever paying a dime. And they still make money because there are a lot of rich people that do want to invest, you know, just to get through tasks easier or whatever. But this is not a multiplayer game. You can play it, I think, with you can get one or two friends to help you. And so you can invite them into your world. But this is not a big world where you show off your new horse or whatever. So it feels very much like just a regular fantastic video game. But what I like also, next to the graphics, is the amazing soundtrack. This is one of the few games that I know where they used a real orchestra and a real composer, like a genuine quality composer, to make the most beautiful soundtrack that I've ever heard in a game. And I'm not kidding you. This is the best game soundtrack I've ever heard. If you want to sample the music, if you don't care for the video game, you can find it on Spotify. It's called Genshin Impact City of Winds Original Game Soundtrack by Yupeng Chen. Yupeng Chen, I should say, Chen. It's got 63 musical numbers from the game. I'm just going to play a few bits and pieces of the music this is the Serenity theme, which is absolutely gorgeous. And a lot of the music is, you can hear that these are real instruments. This is not a synthesizer. And it's got this very, very calming effect on me. Even when you fight, the music makes it feel still. It flows and it's, I don't know, it's my happy place. I hum this along whenever I play this. You've got Legend of the Wind. I don't know what that is. Okay, all of this is a bit... let's see if I can find something a bit more serious. Or there's also, you know, more scary music. What is this? Perilous Path. Okay, it's all kind of background music. But when a fight starts, the music gets more. So the soundtrack adapts to what's happening in the game. So they use these techniques to morph music into different themes depending on what's happening. Just trying to see if I can find... I can't really guess from the titles what kind of music it is. All of this sounds a bit the same. This is very kind of postmodern, right? It's still very cool. You've got this. It's very... I love just listening to this soundtrack. The winery theme. Etc. Etc. So anyway, check it out for yourself. This is even, you know, just completely. If you disconnect it from the game, it's still really wonderful music to listen to, and there's a ton of it on Spotify. So that would be my final tip of the day. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you again for your support. I really appreciate it. Hope you like this. And for those of you that have been watching this live, thank you so much for joining me here on this private stream, which will continue to be available for those of you that haven't been able to catch it live. So it was great to have this moment of community, and I will do this again sometime soon. Take care, God bless, and may the force be with you.